Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, welcome to Sis Internet Radio. Sisters in Spirit, affectionately called Sis, is a nurturing environment for women that inspires harmony in everyday living, shares resources that empower, offers information and support that nourishes the soul, balances our mental and physical well-being, and promotes inner peace and heightened spirituality. Our vision is a world where women live consciously, harmoniously, and spiritually to positively impact our lives and the lives of those with whom we come into contact. Join us as we live life with style, grace, and of course, much joy. Greetings all. Welcome to the Sisters in Spirit Internet Radio Show. I'm Raissa Nazaire, and I'm here with my co-host, Sky. Sky, how are you today? Sky, are you with us? Well, today's show is on organic gardening, and you can organically garden your way to self-sufficiency by taking responsibility for your diet and health. And you can just do that by creating your own garden, which provides your own source of medicine and sustenance. Today's guest is Dave Sutsky, and he will be talking to us about organically gardening your way to self-sufficiency. Hi, Barry.
Hi.
Are you with us?
Excuse me?
I said, are you with us? Hi. How are you today?
I am with you after a brief technical difficulty. I'm here. Glad to be here today.
Oh, yes. We did have a technical difficulty with Blog Talk Radio. And so I also have an issue with the co-host being on the line, Sky. So with that, we'll just kick off the show, and hopefully Sky will be able to join us and call in.
Okay.
So, Barry, welcome to the show. We are glad to hear you, have you here today. Let me give you all some background on Barry. He is married, been married for 23 years. He's a father of four and spent most of his career as a professional truck driver with some background in pest control. And so, Barry, we'd like to talk to you a little more about your background in pest control. I'm thinking that that helped you get into the whole organic gardening thing. He currently lives in a subdivision where he produces 100% of the family's vegetables in their yard. And he's also managed to reduce the electric consumption by over 20% while they were at it. Barry's got a passion for growing world-class food organically and helping others do the same. So here tonight with us is Barry Sutsky, who is here to provide us with more information on organically gardening our way to self-sufficiency. Barry?
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on. We have, in fact, gone from buying everything in the store to just going out in the yard and picking our dinner. And organic gardening is, simple thing, explanation of what organic gardening is that you don't use synthetic fertilizers and pesticides on your plants. That's kind of what, when you go to the store and you see the organic label on something, that what you're seeing is the fact that they didn't use those. But the type of organic gardening that I'm teaching is much more than what you don't do. When you garden organically, you think of your plants as part of a whole ecosystem. And nature starts in the soil. You feed the soil feeds the plant, and the plant feeds you. So what you're actually doing is feeding the microbes and the earthworms. The microbes and the earthworms are feeding the plants, and the plants are feeding you. So one of the things that I was hoping for today is, and actually method is simple, was to, outline some reasons why you might want to grow your own food. And it's a lot deeper than people think, It's a lot more than just a hobby. See, plants, when they're grown chemically, can't access most of the minerals in the soil, and the microbes and the earthworms act as intermediaries. So when you do organic gardening, what you're doing is harnessing nature, and you're taking the raw materials that are in the soil and converting them into organic forms the plant can assimilate, and then in turn the plant gives them to you.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a step back. I'm really, really curious to find out how you got into organic gardening and learning so much that you are able to now share that with others.
I got a good story for you. I've driven millions of miles. I drive all over the place and I make friends. Gardening wasn't something that's necessary. I work a lot of hours, and gardening wasn't necessarily something that was easy to do. But what happened, actually, what started this whole process rolling was some serious health problems, number one. And number two, I was listening to NPR one day, and there was an interview with an archaeologist, and the archaeologist was speaking about the Inca civilization. And it was really fascinating. I mean, these people took 200-ton blocks of stone, and they put them together so tightly. To this day, you can't even jam a knife in between them. I mean, the stuff that they were capable of, the architecture, and it was fascinating. I was really riveted by this interview. And at one point, he mentioned that even though they could tell what the population of the Incas was, there was sufficient archaeological evidence left to say exactly how many of them there were, they could not figure out how they managed to feed themselves. So, excuse me, the number of acres that are there are knowable, and if you take that times modern agriculture, which in fact does put out a whole lot of product, I'll call it product, I don't know food value-wise, but it does put out a whole lot of stuff. If you take modern agriculture times the amount of space that the Incas had available to farm, you don't come out with enough food to feed themselves. So that's kind of what started, was actually an interview about the Incas. And I thought to myself, well, we don't know. And he said they didn't leave a written record of how they grew so much food. And these were brilliant people. I think the way they grew their food went way beyond just the fact that they that they were healthy. I really think it had an impact on the things that they managed to do, like moving 200 pounds blocks of stone without any equipment, stuff like that. The Egyptians also. So anyway, I thought to myself, we know what they couldn't have done. They couldn't have used chemicals. They couldn't use chemical fertilizers. They didn't have tractors. They didn't have any of the equipment we have now. So it kind of did a little bit of reverse engineering in my mind and decided what they had to have done. And that's kind of where a lot of the ideas that I'm using in my garden came from. It's just what was left. And what was left is 100% organic processes and minerals, glacial melt, things that they had available to them. The one remnant there is in South America from the Incas or Central America, wherever they're at, is the raised gardens themselves. So they do know that they used raised gardens. But that's what started me on the path to raising my own food. I had been doing it, you know, chemically, using regular fertilizer and stuff like that, and been successful. I'd done it for years. But I began to realize that what I was throwing on the ground and what the farmers are throwing on the ground, and it's a mistake. These chemical fertilizers that we're putting down, see there's a process that goes on. There's a symbiotic relationship that goes on under the soil. And in an organic garden, it's a complete ecosystem. And what the chemical fertilizers and the pesticides do is they cut that ecosystem off. So the microbes and the earthworms are actually what fed the Incas. And the microbes and the earthworms have the ability to process the minerals and give them to the plants. So in modern agriculture, the only thing that we're doing is putting down three minerals. That'd be nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. So when you look at a fertilizer bag, those three numbers are what's going into the soil.
Okay, so you're basically saying that the Incas did not have a lot of land mass to grow their food on, and so they used some condensed version. And you're saying that the ability to produce a great amount or abundance of food and healthy food at that was based on their soil content.
Yes, yes. See what happened, the Incas, and I thought they didn't have microscopes, so it's really fascinating, but they had to have known something. They made these raised gardens, and they made the irrigation water they used was full of minerals, and they filled backpacks up with compost and lugged it up the side of these mountains. And what happened is once that ecosystem was established, these billions and billions of microbes and earthworms started to process the material that was in there. So actually, they didn't have to fertilize. I mean, they fertilized as far as the compost was, but they didn't have to go beyond that. The unpaid volunteers are on the job 24/7. Yeah, the unpaid volunteers. We're walking on them all the time. I'm actually the unappointed spokesman, or the self-appointed spokesman for the microbiological world, because they have no voice and they're only one cell, and we're always stepping on them. But they're down there. They're down there, and if you make an organic garden the proper way, they'll work for you. It's been going on for billions of years. There's beneficial bacteria, fungi, breaking down organic components. One of the more amazing ones is mycorrhizal fungi. And you don't need to know the names of all this, but just to make a broader point about the Incas, these mycorrhizal fungi got on the roots of their plants, and they dropped little filaments down, microscopic, it would look like monofilament fishing line. They dropped them several feet down into the ground. And they're out there in your yard. If there's no chemicals in your yard, they're already out there. And these fungi pull up nutrients, and they pull up minerals, and they pull up water, and they feed them. They give them to the plants. Millions of years ago, they made, as amazing as it is, they made an agreement, like a microbiological barter. So these fungi that were working for the Incas gave the plants the minerals and the water, and the plant in return gave glucose, sugar water, back to the fungi. And it's been going on to that day. But that's how they managed to outproduce every kind of agriculture we currently have.
Okay, and we can reproduce this environment. Our co-host, Sky, is on the line. Sky, welcome to the show.
Hi, Aguayusa. Thank you. I hope you can hear me okay.
Hear you clearly.
Okay, great.
I think there's some feedback on the line, and Barry, I don't know if it's from your line.
Is that a little better?
No, I think it might be from Barry. This sounds like he may be close to a speaker or a phone.
Hey, I'm on a headset. Do you want me to try switching over to the regular handset, if that'll be better?
Do you hear that in the background, Sky? If not,
no.
We'll continue with the show.
No, I don't hear anything at this point.
Okay, we're good to go.
Okay, great. I'd like to say welcome to everybody and welcome, Barry. We're glad to have you here. And what you've said so far is really fascinating, and I'm just really looking forward to more of the conversation.
Okay.
Yeah,
and you were saying that we could create that soil environment for ourselves. So let's just jump in, and how do we do that? I hear you saying that soil is king. You know, in the money world, cash is king. But in the organic gardening world, soil is king.
Yeah, in the organic gardening world, microbes are king. And they could be, a lot of different little characters. And you don't necessarily have to know what they are, but some of them I couldn't help. They're pretty fascinating. One of the questions I get is, does it work? And this is a pretty interesting story also, that's getting away from the Incas a bit. But have you ever seen a picture of those giant redwood trees and with a 63 Volkswagen Beetle sitting next to it?
Yes, just to show their magnitude.
Yes, those enormous trees, nobody fertilized those. Those grew that big because of minerals and microbes. And the circumstances that created those will be the same circumstances that you create in your garden. And as long as the garden has the proper minerals and has the proper amount of carbon compounds, which is compost, it'll do the same thing for you that it did for those trees. And it wasn't just the Incas, the Egyptians. There's a tribe in Pakistan called the Hunzas. There's been many, many tribes that harness this power. And really, just about any indigenous tribe that they even come across today, there's small ones. There's one they just found recently in the Philippines that was living in an isolated valley. They couldn't even hardly get out. They were just ringed by this big mountain. And they found zero cancer, zero heart disease, zero diabetes, no acne on their children, no mental disorders, just calm, loving people. And, yeah, fair enough, they were living in a grass hut, but some of the happiest people on earth and none of the diseases that we currently have. So, I mean, organic gardening goes way, way beyond, you know, what people could imagine. So
it's been said that 99% of illnesses is linked to your diet. And so if we change our diet, then we change our whole being.
We change everything. Yeah, I got some numbers here. I know them off the top of my head, tell you the truth. But 1900, just to give you an example, diabetes rates were 0.0002% of the adult population. So that's just barely noticeable. In 1997, the rate was up to 11.5% of the adult population. So it was a 10,000% increase. 1900, this is the turn of last century, cancer rates. Since 1900 to the present have gone up 350%. And there's other, heart disease, 1900, not recognized as a cause of death, and currently recognized as said it is the number one killer in the United States. So if you can just imagine, and in 1900, as far as, you know, you always hear, well, you know, that the people are living longer and longer than ever, the vast majority of the deaths that occurred back then were because there was no antibiotics available, and there's a lot to be said for modern medicine. I'm not putting it down, but if you take infant mortality out of that rate, the fact is we were healthier 100 years ago than we are now.
Yeah, and that, I'm sure, has something to do with the fact that we're living, not just the soil, but in addition, we're living in cities and the whole commercialization of food where it's processed and the mineral content is lacking. I was reading on your webpage where you talked about the demineralization of food, not just from the soil, but also because of what is fed to the animals. The animals are fed demineralized foods. And so in doing your own organic gardening, you're taking that initiative to put those minerals that are necessary in the body back into your food source. So could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. It's my life. I could tell you all about that. What happened? There's two things that happened. And, first off, how did the minerals get into the soil to begin with? And what happened in North America is the glaciers, up until about 12,000 years ago, ground across Canada. And a lot of Canada, I don't know if you've ever been up there, but a lot of it's flat. You get into northern Quebec and some of the other provinces up there, and it's flat as a pancake. And how that happened is these glaciers ground the hills and the mountains down to nothing. Well, about 12,000 years ago, the glaciers began to melt. And because of the cold air, and underneath these glaciers there's places where there's 100 foot or more of this glacial rock dust and glacial gravel. And what happened is because of the very low temperatures that existed in Canada because of the ice that was still left, and then the hot temperatures over the plains of the United States, about a 200 mile an hour breeze blew straight south. So the entire North American continent and likely the world was dusted with this rock dust. And because these glaciers had ground across so many different rock strata, it contained every possible mineral that there is, and it dusted Florida, it dusted Pennsylvania, name me a state, it landed there. So the depletion as far as the minerals was going to happen anyway. Basically, we're in an interglacial period right now. So what happens is every 80 or 90,000 years, and I hope we don't freeze up anytime soon, the minerals are reapplied. So under the best of circumstances, the eventual depletion of the minerals in the soil would have happened. But what accelerated the process is about 150 years ago, a German scientist, he actually made a mistake. He took some wheat kernels, and he was a brilliant scientist. He's known as the father, Justus van Liebig's name is, he's the father of modern organic chemistry. He burnt the wheat kernels, and he realized that they were primarily nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And he was well-recognized, and he said that's the only thing needed to grow plants. So over time, we would have depleted the soil anyway, but unfortunately, those are the only three things we replace now. We got away from organic methods, and in fact, a lot of people, a lot of the PhD-toting ag scientists out there, ag professors, don't necessarily believe that organic methods even work, but they haven't been taught that. They believe what von Liebig said. And what that did was, in addition to not replacing these elements, so whereas, you know, if you use manure for fertilizers, if you use compost for fertilizers, not only did they not replace anything but three elements, they also cut off the manner in which plants were actually getting them. And so the depletion was already going to happen, although you can replace the minerals, and in fact that's what I do. I mean, and that's what I teach people to do, is replace the minerals in your own little yard. It was going to happen anyway, but with the advent of chemical fertilizers 150 years ago, a lot of them are salts. The salts kill the microbes. The salts burn the earthworms. These are the best friends humanity ever had, and we don't even know they're there. And these chemicals burn them and hurt them. The other issue is a lot of the fungicides that are used, that mycorrhizal fungi that I was telling you about, the rhizobia bacteria, all those things, the fungicides kill those. So what we have going on right now is that if you were to take a tomato off the shelf in the grocery store, you would end up, if you put it in the lab analysis, end up with about 14 minerals. Do you eat tomatoes?
Yes, I do. I grow them. I have my organic
grow them?
Gardening.
Oh, you're an organic. Oh.
So our listeners, for the most part, have started growing organic gardens. And so that is one of the things that we promoted on the show. And so we'll be getting some questions from them and some comments as well as we get further into the show. And for those of you who are just joining, you're listening to Barry Siskey, and the topic is gain self-sufficiency through organic gardening.
Yeah, if I start rambling on, feel free to cut me off. I'm liable to talk the whole hour. I love this
stuff. What I wanted to really get into with you was, what can people do to get their soil back to its natural consistency and even greater, along the lines of what you described with what the Incas had done?
Okay. There's two methods that I teach, and I'll tell you what I did. I did a show a while back, about a month ago. I'm looking for the other list here. The first thing is, the first method that I teach is the superfoods method. So if nothing else, if someone just today just really wanted to get started, I'll make some suggestions. Now, in a lot of cases, gardens have actually had at some time or another chemicals on them. I just presume that mine did, because I didn't own this house when it was built, and I just assumed that lawn fertilizers and stuff like that had ended up on the ground. So one of the things you can do, okay, let's back up a little bit here. If you just want to grow something, you've never grown anything before, dig the soil. It's about 100 square foot. This is the numbers I'm going to give out for 100 square foot. With a shovel, flip the soil over. If you want to use a rototiller, fine, but it's better if you sink a shovel real deep, because the deeper you go, the better off you're going to be.
Hey, and, Barry, so you said 100 square feet. Can you help me visualize that? So what would that be, the size of a what object?
About like a big car. That'd be a big car from 1962, huh? 10 by 10.
The big Cadillac, huh?
Yeah, I used to have a 1962 Cadillac somebody gave me, and it was just, it just took, you know, I wish I hung on to it. It'd probably be worth one of those old Elvis cars I was driving around in.
Okay. The size of a large car.
Yeah, a real big car. It's 10 by 10, 7 by 15. I'm trying to think of something that would be in square feet, but if you just imagine about 6 foot by 15 foot, that's 90 square feet. So a lot of gardens would be in that shape, sort of a rectangle. And I usually suggest that people start with 100 square feet if they haven't gardened before, because you'll get a whole lot more production out of 100 well-kept square feet than 200 not-so-well-kept square feet.
Okay.
So that's why I mentioned that. But if they just, pick off about 100 square feet and dump, take the shovel, stir it up, and dump 100 pounds of compost. I do teach people how to make compost. It's not hard, but I'm assuming that they wouldn't have any made because they're just starting. 100 pounds of compost, 4 cups of gypsum. Okay, Now, what gypsum does, and it's a mineral, they dig it out of the ground with a front-end loader, it's a mineral. What gypsum does is detoxifies the soil. So if your soil did have yard chemicals, did have lawn chemicals, did have chemical fertilizers in there, the gypsum will pull all that out. So one of the first things, if you really want to get the garden fully functional, is to dump some gypsum on there. If you never have, even if you've been gardening for years, gypsum's some pretty great stuff.
You can get that from any nursery or Home Depot, let's say?
It's dependent on where you live, yeah. As a matter of fact, it was really, really hard. I live in, what state are you in?
We're all over. I'm in Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
On the
line. I'm in Washington, D.C.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, well, we got the coast covered, huh? I'm kind of down here with the down here in Gatorland a little bit, a little south of Gainesville.
Okay, Florida. Holla.
And anyway, yeah, gypsum, depending on where you're at, you should be able to go into Home Depot in Georgia and definitely get it. One of the things that gypsum's used for is to break up the clay. So Florida doesn't have any clay. It's a sandbox. I had to build my soil from scratch. And at first I thought that was a bad thing, but really not, because if you don't have anything, you got to put everything in. So, but yeah, gypsum... You could definitely find in Georgia, because one of the benefits of it, in addition to removing the salts and removing the chemicals from the soil, is it breaks up the clay. So if you have a lot of clay in your soil and you I figured, was it that red stuff, huh?
Yep, that's the Georgia soil, high clay content. Okay, what else can we add to our soil?
100 pounds of compost, and I suggest at least 4 cups of gypsum. Generally, a cup is a pound. So you can put between 4 and 8 pounds of gypsum in there. I'm just going to go with the one-step method. And then 4 pounds of cottonseed meal, 2 pounds of bone meal, and 5 pounds of alfalfa pellets.
And you can get that information on your site. Is that correct? Would you give us your site info?
Oh, I sure would do that. RelyOnYourself.com. And my talk radio show and blog talk radio is blogtalkradio.com/selfreliance radio. So, but yeah, reliantyourself.com. All the numbers I'm giving you are up there, and there's also a list of specifically what each element you're adding does. But anybody who put down 100 pounds of compost, gypsum, cottonseed meal, bone meal, alfalfa pellets, you can get them at any feed dealer. It's like 50-pound bag is around $10, so they're pretty cheap. And you mix that in, you can grow about anything. Now, I know some people don't, they're vegetarians or whatever, they don't want to use bone meal. You can use rock phosphate instead, 2 pounds of rock
phosphate. I was going to ask that question because a lot of people are vegan and heavily into organic gardening, and so they have to find substitutes. For me, I use mushroom compost, and I'm sure that there are other things that people who don't want to use meat or meat byproducts can use.
Yeah, the reason I didn't go with the rock phosphate is because I couldn't find it locally. I don't live in a big enough town. It should be available in a place like Atlanta, for example, if you're up in Georgia. I mean, I'm sure in Atlanta you could get rock phosphate, but I would have had to have it shipped from Montana. So.
Okay.
So I went ahead and used the bone meal.
And shipping there.
Yeah, it was actually, I ended up getting the rock dust that way, and then I put in 1 pound of rock dust. And that's good enough to grow. If someone really wants to do the full-blown superfoods gardening method, it's in two sections. You put the four cups chips and 2 pound cottonseed meal. I have all that listed on my site in the superfoods gardening page. And then you flip it over, and then you more or less do the whole thing over again with the addition of kelp meal. And what that does is creates about a foot at least of world-class topsoil. So the first couple seasons, I recommend doing both steps, although you don't have to. I'm just thinking of someone who's beginning out now. If they just want to get something in the ground, they can skip the rock dust and just go with the compost and the gypsum and the cottonseed meal and the bone meal, and that'll get them going faster.
Okay, but so let's just say it's now July, and a lot of people have already started their gardens, and they've got things growing, and so you're not starting from scratch. What would you add at this point in time to your garden to get it closer to that superfood category?
Okay, if you can get rock dust. Now, there's a variety of, I should have explained rock dust. The rock dust that I'm using came from Canada, from under one of those glaciers I told you about. Any basaltic rock dust, the simple explanation is that most quarries, assuming that they're not a lime rock quarry, would have a usable rock dust. There's rock dust from Arkansas called Arzamite. If you do a search on rock dust, you'll come up with a lot of suppliers. They don't actually sell anything like that. The rock dust I got is called Gaia, G-I-A-I green rock dust, and it's glacial in origin, comes from Vancouver, British Columbia, and I, in fact, did have that shipped from Montana. I got it at there's a site, I don't have any financial, relationship with them, but I was happy with their service. It was called Planet Natural, and I got the rock dust from them. And what the rock dust does, if you didn't do anything else, so you got an existing garden, just take 1 pound or 2 pounds per 100 square feet and just dust the top of your garden and water it in. And what that'll do is put the minerals in the ground that are lacking. Depending on where you live, you're going to be missing something. And when that rock dust gets in there, it will tend to create a microbiological mushroom cloud in your garden, and it'll really kick things off. So if you're already gardening and you can get a hold of some rock dust, like I say, there's different kinds. The critical factor with it is not so much the source. It's just as long as it's not lime rock, because that's just regular ag lime like you get in the store to change the pH. The critical factor is that it's ground talcum powder fine. The finer it is, the more surface area there is, and the faster it'll react in your garden. So if someone's already gardening, if you can get gypsum, just sprinkle it on the surface and water it in, and a couple pounds of rock dust per 100 square feet and water that in, and you'll start seeing results fairly quickly.
Let's go to our callers, and actually we'll start with the blog and get some input from what some folks have said there. And the blog comment was, or question was, has high produce prices or pesticide content got you thinking I need to start my own garden? And so we got some feedback from some folks and who have said yes and started their own garden. And one person said, I've tried some organic pesticides, and they don't seem to work. The bugs are having a grand time. What would you recommend? And when you're out there gardening, what do you use to keep the pests from biting?
Okay.
I know that pesting is a big thing for me, because almost every time I go out to my garden, I get 5 or 6 mosquito bites.
Yeah, the mosquitoes are you need more lizards in your garden, right?
Oh, there's plenty of lizards in the area.
I know there is.
I can appreciate them now a little more than since I know that they eat the mosquitoes.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I knew you had them there. I spent some time in South Georgia, places, Waycross, places like that. I know we got the mosquitoes. I couldn't tell you how to get rid of those, but as far as if you're asking about the garden in general, the first thing I do is I bought a Dialis sprayer. Are you familiar with what a Dialis sprayer is?
A Dialis sprayer? No, I'm not.
Okay, it's sort of a thing. It hooks on the end of your hose, and it's got a little jug on the bottom, and it's got a dial on the top. I bought it at Lowe's. I prefer, and I just put this out there, any of you, if there's a mom-and-pop store that you can buy stuff at, please do. It'll help the local economy a lot more than the big-box stores, but each your own. I actually did buy this thing at Lowe's. And what I do is I fill it with a mixture of lemon dish soap, like Sunlight. Dish soap. You know, like Sunlight dish soap, the lemon kind?
Oh, dish soap. Okay.
Yeah, you can go, if you're a 100% organic person, just go to the organic store, wherever you usually, the health food store, and you can use a real good soap to use is mint. There's an organic mint soap that you can use. But if you have lemon dish soap, liquid dish soap around, you can use that. Now, what I do is take about 5 ounces. It doesn't matter the exact amount, but you need to mix equal parts of water and dish soap. The first Dial sprayer I had, I wrecked it because I didn't, put some water. It's too thick.
Okay.
So 50-50 blend of lemon dish soap and water. and wash your plants. And that'll do a couple things. Number one, it'll kill the aphids, the thrips, and the whiteflies outright. If you put a little pressure on it, it'll blow the little red things. The names escape me.
The ladybugs?
Well, the ladybugs are good. It won't hurt the ladybugs. Okay.
Okay,
the reason you're seeing ladybugs is the ladybugs are eating the aphids.
Oh, I was just wondering. I don't see ladybugs, so I don't have the good guys out there on my team.
You know, you can, and I'm going to suggest not, but there are people that sell ladybug cocoon. They're like an egg thing, you know. And what happens is you put the ladybugs in your garden, and they hatch, and they fly away. So if they're not showing up there, then but don't you know, I'll save you some money. I found out the hard way. They'll just, most of them will fly away. So if they're not showing up, that may be a good sign. It may be because you're not having a problem with aphids. So the first thing I do is I set the dial sprayer on the 1 teaspoon per gallon. So 50-50 blend of dish soap, preferably lemon, and then I set the dial sprayer on 1 teaspoon per gallon. And what that essentially does is blows out a half a teaspoon of actual soap per gallon. And it's not thick where, you know, it's going to harm your plants. And so anyway, that kills aphids straight out, and thrips and whiteflies. It kills them. And why do I keep forgetting the name of these buggers? The little red things, spider mites. You can blow them off the leaves with. Yeah, I couldn't. They're real tiny, and if you really look close at the leaves of the plant, you'll see them. They're almost a rust-colored little thing. So that's the number one thing I do. Number two thing I do is are you familiar with Dipel or BT, Bacillus thuringiensis?
No.
Throwing a little Latin at you there. Okay, what Dipel is it is a bacteria. And what it does is when the bugs walk on your plants, and a lot of insects actually clean themselves. You know how a cat does with their paw?
Yes.
A lot of insects actually clean themselves. The caterpillars walk through it, and they ingest it. And this bacteria, it is absolutely harmless to people. And I dust them with a mixture of 50% Dipel is the brand name, and 50% diatomaceous earth. Diatomaceous earth is a powder, it's a white powder that is the remnants of microscopic ancient sea creatures. Again, no effect on humans at all.
And how do you spell that? Dia is what? D-I-A?
D-I-A-T-O-M-A-C-E-O-S.
Okay.
You know, I'm hoping I spelled it right. That's my scribble. It's sold as DE is the abbreviation for it, and that'll work on any soft-bodied creatures. So between the Dipel and the diatomaceous earth, I take the 50% blend of those two powders. I have an old boric acid container, and I put it in there and just dust the plants with it. See, a lot of people think that Dipel and diatomaceous earth don't work, and the reason is if you try to put it on your plants, it generally all ends up on the top, and it looks like it snowed or something. But if you can get it into an old boric acid container or something along them lines, you can just squeeze it and dust the plant. So that takes care of army worms, but cabbage loopers, it takes care of a myriad of insects between the BT. See, if you go in the store and you're looking for Dipel, they may not have the brand, but if you read the label on these white powders that they sell that are organic,
mm-hmm.
You'll see it listed as BT would be the ingredient.
Okay.
And, so that's chemical-free, so you just eliminated a lot of the problems that you might have. Beyond that, there is an organic pesticide that's derived from chrysanthemum flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And, this is going to be a rough one. If someone wants to know the trade names, the easiest thing, I'm going to say these, but the easiest thing, you send me an email, barry@relyonyourself.com, and I can tell you the exact chemical names that are in them. The stuff I bought is called Cyanora, C-Y-A-N-O-R-A, Cyanora.
Mm-hmm.
And it's derived from chrysanthemum flowers. It's peripheroid is the family of pesticides that it's called, but it's not a chemical. It's an extract from a chrysanthemum flower. And between washing the plants, the Dipel, the diatomaceous earth, and the
pyrethroids, that kills everything. It's not easy to do. I mean, it is a process, but actually, just washing the plants alone will help dramatically. It takes the dirt off the leaves and allows the photosynthesis to occur a lot more. Another thing that you're going to notice, and this is something that they can't prove, but it's a theory, but you will notice it when you get the rock dust and the gypsum into the ground. You're going to have a lot less insects. The reason they believe that happens, what they believe is going on is that the insects can see in the ultraviolet light range, and as an insect's flying over, deciding what it wants to eat, the fully functional superfood soil that you're building, fully mineralized, looks different to the insect, and you will have a lot less insects than you ever had before. Now, that may take some time. I mean, you know, you start to notice if you just put the rock dust and the gypsum down now, a year from now, you will notice about a 50% reduction in a lot of cases of insects. And whatever does show up, the dipel and the diatomaceous earth, and in a pinch, the pyrethroids, you can spray on there.
Okay.
I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, it's getting on the roll. But I know they're big words, but they're any store that sells you know, organic gardening stuff should have DE or diatomaceous earth, it's called. And they definitely have dipel, although it may not be branded dipel. You'd have to look on the back and look for the letters BT. But that'll take care of all caterpillars. It'll take care of like most of what's going to bother you. And,
thank you for that. We've got a second question, and it says, what can you do if you want to start an organic garden and live in an inner city where there is a problem with vermin? Will they be attracted to the vegetables that you grow and therefore infest your garden?
I haven't had any problems. I'm in the inner city. We haven't had... We're in a neighborhood. We got 15 acres of pasture and woods out back, and there's everything from coyotes to there are rats. There's wood rats, plenty of those around. And so far, they haven't. The only thing we've had problems with is armadillos, and we got rid of those. But I don't believe so. I've never had any of the wood rats eat on anything in the garden. I think they're more after stuff that's decaying. But.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I live in a country environment, and there are field mice out there and all of that, and I haven't had any problems with any pests in my yard, but I guess the question is more for an urban environment where you may have mice and rats that are really looking for food. They don't have as much opportunity to eat other things.
Yeah, it hasn't happened so far. I can look it up. I mean, I can definitely look that. I got a stack of books, and I can find out exactly, but I've never had any problem with mice or rats. Now, when we first moved in this house, we had a cat, and the cat was forever bringing these wood rats home. And it was kind of like a welcome present when I came home from work. I know they're out there, and I know they've gotten into the trash cans and things like that, but so far they haven't done any damage to the garden. But if someone's having a problem, send me an email. I definitely have the resource materials to find out exactly if you are having that problem, how to solve it. But I honestly don't know off the top of my head because I never had the problem.
And if we have a listener on the line or someone on the Internet as well, if you know any more about organic gardening and attracting vermin, would you please either call in or send us a chat, and we'll share that information with the rest of the listeners. If you are on the line and you would like to ask a question, we're going to go online now. And I will call you on by the last four digits of your phone number. So I see we have a hand up for caller 5386. Caller 5386, you are on the air. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, good evening. This is Zita, and I'm really enjoying this conversation this evening. Thank you a lot. I had one comment. What I realized is eating non-organic had me just sick. I didn't realize it until I stopped eating non-organic foods, just how, it was affecting my body. now my body is responding very well to just, you know, regular food, small amounts of food. I'm losing weight, and I'm just feeling a lot better. So it's nothing more than to make yourself feel better. We should stop eating foods with pesticides on them. And I really enjoy, I really look forward to getting on your website, too, Relying Yourself. I love the way that sounds. I love just that title. So I will be in touch with you, and thank you very much. Bye-bye.
And Barry, tell us a little bit more about what you do at Rely on Yourself, and if you have any upcoming events, would you share those with our audience?
Actually, next Thursday at 7 p.m., the show ad isn't up there, but at Self-Reliance Radio, I have a fellow coming on, Mr. James Zitting. He's from BLanding.com. So next Thursday's show, 7 p.m. at blogtalkradio.com/self-reliance-radio is he's going to do we're going to be doing a one-hour show on sustainable beekeeping. Mr. Zitting's been in the beekeeping business for 20 years, and he invented a special kind of hive. I'm not real knowledgeable about bees, but I have an interest in them, and if anyone's interested in raising their own honey, Mr. Zitting will be there to answer questions. And so anyway, that's what I got going on next week, is a bee show.
Okay, that sounds very interesting. And thank you to our caller for asking that question as well. Sky, is there anything that you would like to address?
Well, Barry, you know, looking at your site, I saw you were talking about superfoods, and I wanted to know, does it matter the environment, and can you go into a little bit more detail about the superfoods? That might have been something that I missed earlier, but, you know, just the concept and what those superfoods are. Is it something that we can readily grow in the city? In the city environment, most of us live in a city environment. We're not totally rural areas. So is that something that we can do, and is it something that we can start doing right away?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's no restrictions on who can grow superfoods at all. As a matter of fact, some people are growing them in containers. So it's whatever you have room for. There's people that have As a matter of fact, if you want a free container garden, go to the local PetSmart, tell the manager to save the fish boxes that they get the tropical fish deliveries in. And what they are is really a styrofoam core. Okay, so you take the fish box and just get a drill holes all around the side, all around the bottom, and then fill it up with potting soil with a fair amount of perlite or vermiculite. Okay, one of the problems with a container garden is that, you know, the water doesn't air out the way it would in soil. But, yeah, you could be in the city with nothing but one of these free. I love free, by the way. So I mean, these things are going to go to the landfill. That's one of the things I'm up to, is taking things that people are throwing out and putting them to use. You know, if your neighbor's letting the leaves and they're throwing them out, put them in your compost bin. They'll give them to you happily. So, anyway, any garden that you put the rock dust in and the gypsum will detoxify it. The rock dust and the compost will together create an environment where the earthworms and the microbes will thrive. And over time, your garden will go mycorrhizal, and you won't know it. You know, you'll just know your plants are growing like crazy. And when the garden goes mycorrhizal due to these fungi who are no longer being afflicted by the chemicals or the chemical fertilizers, you'll have superfoods. That term is sometimes applied to real specific kind of expensive things. You may have noticed that, you know, like organic chocolate from South America and goji berries from China. But the reason I'm using the term is when I read the analysis, for example, on goji berries, if you take the right things and put it in the soil that's around a blueberry in South Georgia, you got your own superfoods without having to import them from China. So, I mean, a carrot, broccoli, anything can achieve superfood status as long as it's grown by Mother Nature and the microbes and not doused with chemicals. So
basically it's nutrient-dense, organic nutrient-dense foods?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Okay.
See, these examples of tomato. Okay, so the store-bought tomato's got 14 minerals. A superfoods tomato that you can grow in your yard, you know, once all the minerals are in there, the tomato knows from its DNA over thousands and thousands of years exactly which minerals to grab from the soil and exactly which proportions. So in a fully mineralized soil, that I call superfood soil, but fully functional would be another way to look at it, you're going to have a 56 mineral tomato. So you have 400% more minerals in that tomato out of your backyard than that one you got in there. You see, then the human body was made to run on all 56 of those minerals, and they're not getting it anymore.
And I also read on your site that we're born with 90 minerals in our body, and they need to be replaced as we use them up. And so if you're not getting that in your foods, people will try to get it from vitamins, but vitamins don't absorb in your system the same way it would as if you were getting that from a natural food product. And so, again, need for enhancing the soil.
Exactly. What the plants do is I'm not against supplements at all. I took them for years, but, you know, I'm in a 12-month growing environment, so I kind of grow my supplements. But what the plants do is they turn the calcium, for example, and a lot of women with osteoporosis, calcium is a really, really, really important mineral for them to be getting, correct? And the calcium in, let's just say collard greens or kale or broccoli or one of the things, it's in an organic compound. It's in a form your body recognizes and immediately takes in. So a lot of supplements actually don't end up in the person's body. They just, you know, I'm sure they're beneficial, but getting those calcium and magnesium and all that kind of vitamin C and all that directly from the food is dramatically better. And your body immediately, wow, I haven't seen this in 1,000 years, you know. It makes your immune system happy. Your fingernails will get thicker. I mean, there's some bizarre side effects. Weight will fall off. Please, if someone's sick out there, go to the doctors. I don't want to, cause any harm. I lost 35 pounds without doing anything. My wife lost 30 pounds, and we got to a certain weight, and the weight loss stopped. Your body knows somehow what weight is supposed to be. We'll try it. I mean, as a matter of fact, your caller mentioned something like that. So, but that was one of the bizarre side effects. Without trying, you kind of lose weight because your body's furnace has everything it needs to burn the calories. That's mm-hmm. my theory. But all I can tell you is, I was telling my wife, I said, "Baby, you're looking like 1970." You know.
And you made the comment, too, on the site that the solution is to grow your own food and soil that has been prepared with as many minerals as possible in it. If you feed the soil and the soil will feed the plant will feed you, and the health and well-being of all of us ultimately depends on a highly mineralized, alive, and vibrant soil. And that's what you are referring to. That's the soil that grows the superfoods. It's not hard. And it's well worth the effort.
It absolutely is.
Is there another question from our caller?
Yeah, am I on?
Yes, you are.
Oh, good. I did. I wanted to tell Barry, I really like the way he redefines superfoods, because if we leave it up to, what we see on TV, they just redefine superfoods as, broccolis and different things like that. And these foods are grown with fertilizer, so they do not become superfoods in our body. I really like that, the way you redefined that. It makes a lot of sense. Because I was the one who spoke earlier, when I got off of foods grown with pesticides, I myself, too, started losing weight rapidly. So I was being poisoned by fertilizer. My body, I got a holistic nutritionist, and what she told me was that even I was eating, 90%, fruits and vegetables, no meat. And what she said is that I had been doing it for years. But what she said was, by me not eating organic, my body and my liver was too busy trying to break down the fertilizers and the poisons that I wasn't getting any real nutrition from the foods.
Right.
Yeah, the other issue is enzymes in fresh, assuming that you're eating some of them, in the form of a salad. Their enzymes they're just a critical factor in the digestive system and the overall health of a person. So the superfood enzymes, they're just jacked. And the neat thing is that anybody can do it, and it's cheap. And I just really believe, and you're not dumping chemicals all over the ground. So You know, you got a multi-billion-dollar petrochemical industry out there that doesn't want to hear you can grow food for almost free, but you can.
And in addition to that, you're out there moving around, you're exercising, you're walking, you're getting air. It might not be the freshest air, depending on your environment, but you're out there and you're active.
Exactly, and a lot of people believe that sun's not good for you. Now, too much sun isn't. So I didn't have any expectations coming in about weight loss. You know, I was overweight, let's face it, but I had no expectations of any weight loss, but I know it happened. So I think part of it is from the exercise, but I really sincerely believe part of it is from all the vitamins and minerals that people are just getting heavier and heavier, and they're not necessarily overeating. So I just think this lack of minerals may, in fact, be part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. So it's not the hormones that are making people bigger. It's because the foods are not being broken down. We're getting ready to end the show, so I wanted to go to close. And usually we do close with a quote on our topic or saying. So, Barry, do you have something that you would like to leave the audience with?
I got my quote. You know what? I got it written down, but I know it off the top of my head. The quote is from Hippocrates, who's the father of modern medicine. And what Hippocrates said was, "Let thy medicine be thy food, and let thy food be thy medicine."
Wonderful, because that's my quote, too. So I
wonderful.
What did you say, Sky?
Oh, I was saying wonderful. You both had the same quote.
Yep. Do you have one as well?
Yes. Mine states, be your own politics, grow your own garden, and maybe you can help out more, by Rip Torn.
And I have an expanded version of the Hippocrates quote. And it says, everyone has a doctor in him or her. We just need to help it in its work. The natural healing force within each one of us is the greatest force in getting well. Our food should be our medicine. Our medicine should be our food. But to eat when you are sick is to feed your sickness.
Wow.
So you are listening to Sys Internet Radio. Barry, one more time, would you give us the information about your website and your upcoming event? And I know you have products as well, so really quickly you can mention your book, and we'd love to hear more.
The website is relyonyourself.com. Those are affiliate links up there. I am in the process of writing a book called Inca Gardening. It is not up there yet, to keep on checking. It'll be up there as soon as I can get it up there. Barry, any questions? Barry@relyonyourself.com. My blog talk radio show is blogtalkradio.com/selfreliance radio. And next Thursday, 7 p.m., I'm going to be doing a honey show with James Zitting. And if you have any questions, feel free to email me. I can answer most of them.
Oh, thank you so much. And remember, if you've missed part of the show, you can always go back to Blog Talk Radio and listen to the show in archives. So
yeah.
You're listening to this internet radio. I am here with my co-host, Sky. Our guest is Barry Schutze, and we've been talking about organic gardening and working towards self-sufficiency. We thank you all for joining today. I just would like to make one more comment regarding Sys, and that is that we have two upcoming shows scheduled in January. One is going to be on travel tips for women, so traveling, making it an adventure, and also we're going to be talking about hair and natural hair care. Stay tuned for more information on both. Sky, would you like to close out?
Yes, I'd just like to thank everybody for being with us this evening. Thank our callers. Thank you, Barry, for sharing your expertise and your enthusiasm. I'm sure we'll have a couple more questions that we'd like to send to you, and we will definitely email you. And as Raisa said, we have some great upcoming shows, including one in later July, where we're going to have an evening of self-expression, and we're just going to be reciting poetry to written words, so look for additional details on that as well. Thank you for joining us this evening. Thank you, Barry.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, both of you. It was a pleasure being on with you today.
Okay.
You enjoyed
listening to. You've been listening to Sisters in Spirit. Remember to infuse harmony in your everyday living.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Sis Internet Radio. Until the next time, enjoy the fluid flow of life by remembering to infuse harmony into your everyday living.